This is Kristen Vardo with my informant, Stacey Osder. My first question is, you're involved in activism and women's rights. What made you get involved?
I'm involved in activism and across the board, and women's rights just kind of happened. It started when I was really young, and I was driving around with my mom. And I just knew that our life was the way it was by pure luck and being born that way. And it kind of evolved from there, and I got involved in the injustices of so many things I don't even know. And I always was kind of a feminist and didn't know I was a feminist. I was always since a child that if a guy could do it, I could do it. And if my brother wasn't going to do dishes, why should I? And or cook dinner, why should I? So I think it started very young where it came from. I have no idea. I seriously think I was born this way. And then my life experiences just kind of built it up a little bit.
So when you said you, with your mom, and you guys were like, had this life for that reason or whatever,
what did I mean?
Yeah.
What I meant was we had the necessities in life. We had a good life. We were fortunate, and I didn't really know what that meant at this age, but I know when we drove by this place off the, I think it's off the Harbor Freeway or Hollywood Freeway or something, and I just saw a building, and I knew, I don't know how I knew, but I knew people lived in there, and I knew that it was only by pure chance that we weren't born into that, and that did something to me, and it just went from there.
Okay,
we just had a really decent life.
So when you saw like your brother doing things and or not doing things that you had to do, that made you want to get involved?
No, but I think it was the start of the beginning of showing signs that I was a little bit of a feminist. In retrospect, who would have called it a feminist? I wouldn't have. I just thought it was unfair, and why should I do something because I'm a girl and he's not because he's a boy? And my dad kind of raised me that I could do and be anything I want. So I never felt I should just be a teacher or a nurse or those female things. So I was never confined by gender expectations, really, not by my family anyway. Well, not by my dad. And that blossomed. I'm a very feisty person. I'm very interested in justice and fairness and integrity. And I always have been. I'm very spiritual. That came about when I was like 12. I read a book and it kind of, I don't even know, it changed my life. And then many years later, unexpectedly, I fell in love with a woman and got very involved in the gay community and in a relationship. And that opened up a whole another piece of it. So I just became stronger and stronger in my belief for women's rights.
That's interesting. So tell me about a time in your childhood that was probably the hardest time of your childhood.
Okay, so my childhood was really pretty. We were the pretty family. We had everything. But there was difficulties within the home. And the hardest time, I had a few step-parents along the way between then and now. And when I was younger, out of all of them, I had the two worst step-parents I've ever had. And my stepfather was just a horrible human being, and he was nasty, and he was emotionally abusive. And my mom didn't handle it the way I wish she had. So it was very difficult and hard on me. And it fell more on me because I'm rebellious and feisty and smart, and I have a big mouth. And which all helped with activism. And then my dad later married someone, and she started off really nice. And she was a horrible, horrible, horrible woman. And at one point, she was going to kill me. And my dad found out and stopped it. And she was really, prior to that, very, very, very abusive emotionally and verbally. And she never touched us, but she would do things like make food that was so hot we couldn't eat it, and we'd start crying when we were eating it. So he was with her for a while, and that probably was really bad. Both of the having my stepfather in the picture for so many years and her. But perhaps the very worst thing, you would think those would be the worst, but
yeah,
was I was very close with my dad, and I wasn't allowed to see him at one point because of financial stuff. So that was really horrible.
So how did you cope with not being able to see your dad?
Well, the reason I laugh is I would lie to my parents, and I would sneak out to see him, and then I developed a secret code so we could send letters to each other that no one could understand what we were saying, and sent my dad a copy of the code, and right or wrong, he went along with it, and we communicated, and I'd sneak out and see him, and my stepfather one time caught me and informed me he caught me, which, of course, I denied up and down.
Yeah.
So he put me in a position to lie, which I don't lie. So that was horrible. And he made me lie to my grandparents that I hadn't been with my dad, that if I really wasn't, tell them I wasn't. So I looked them in the eye and I told them no.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of horrible times from my childhood. So there's not one overwhelming one that was the worst. It was combined horrendous stuff. And I didn't realize how bad it was until I was an adult.
So since you are, like, really spiritual, did anything in your childhood make you, like, turn to the more spiritual side?
Well, it started, believe it or not, it started when I was 12 years old, and I read a book by Edgar Cayce on reincarnation, and I don't know what happened with that book, but I read it, and by the end of the book, I was a different person and had different beliefs.
Really?
Yeah, it just, like, opened a door. And then I started not researching, because we didn't have the internet back then, but I started reading and exploring, and, you know, it just piqued my interest. And then as time went on, I would have, when I became a young adult, well, I always knew things and saw things and all that, but I just thought it was my imagination, because I'm a really creative child person. And people came to me, and starting, like, when I was 19, 18, something like that, and started saying stuff like, you don't know who you are. I have to teach you this. You have no idea who you are. And I was kind of like, just leave me alone. I don't want to know. I just want to have fun and go away. And it kept happening. And that's really weird in the spiritual world.
So it came to you, pretty much?
They came to me.
Yeah.
The teachers all came to me. And it happened repeatedly. I accepted one teacher, and then he didn't teach me well, and I had horrible nightmares and all this really bad stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I fired him, I guess. And then in my early 30s, then something happened that kind of cracked me open, and I started having visions and stuff. And then I accepted a teacher in my early 30s, and she helped me understand my gifts and all that. And I went on to learn that I found out that I'm a healer and really gifted. And when I say gifted, I mean I'm clairaudient, clairvoyant, you know, all that stuff. So it's all kind of come together. So spirituality has always been a huge part of my life in one way or another, and I don't think I could have made it through anything without it.
Do you have anything that signifies your spirituality, like in a way that no one else would understand?
I have tons of stuff like that. Most of them are pretty sacred and private, so I won't tell you about it or show you it. I have a picture that, for some reason, just always reminded me of me, and it's a drawing that someone did for me. And it's of an American Indian woman looking out over her village, the mountains and whatever, and it just always reminded me of me. And it always reminded me of my connection to spirit and the importance of never losing that connection and what it could do for you. And to help, that it's always helped me through. It's always been the thing I fall back on, is to just feel the connection. And that way, always walk with integrity, always do the right thing to the best of my ability, fight the fight, you know, which is why I'm a really good advocate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't advocate for everything under the sun because you have to pick your battles.
Yeah.
You know, so I pick where my heart takes me. But I guess that picture is one thing. I have another picture someone put together for me that's like a, what's it called? I can't
even collage.
A collage. And it just has all these sayings and everything. And I, it's not the most beautiful thing in the world for sure, but I have it so that it just reminds me of stuff, of things I know to kind of keep me on track if I forget, like if I'm having a really bad day.
Like your personal, just like anything.
Sort of something. And then I have an altar, which I can't show you, and, you know, certain things. But I guess that would, does that answer your question?
Yeah, so those, like, artifacts and pictures are something that only, like, speaks to you in a certain way, not anyone else.
Right, I mean, everyone always likes them when they see them, but I know what they mean to me.
Yeah.
You know, I in my home office, I have a picture that is like a 20s picture or something. It's these really cool women behind bars and just kind of these beauties of that time. And it says, no men allowed. And I got that when I was one of the first gay marriages, and way back when, before it was ever a fight. And I got that picture for my friend at that time, and then I loved it so much I bought it, and so that's in my office, and no one has any idea what that means for me,
mm-hmm.
but it means so much for me, to me, and signifies so many things, strength of women, beauty of women in all its forms, I mean, just, and just to be yourself no matter what, and just a really great time in my life, and probably one of the happiest times in my life, and it just, people come and go, oh, that's a cool picture. I'm like, thank you, you know.
Yeah, it is a really cool picture. So being that your first marriage was, well, like one of the first gay marriages, how did you handle that?
We were very careful who we invited. We got married exactly like we wanted to. It was a big wedding for us. We only wanted like 100 and some odd people. And we handpicked who could come, and we only invited people that loved us or that we loved so much we didn't care what their ideas were. It was an incredible wedding. It was a beautiful wedding. It was a traditional wedding in every way except that it was gay.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't get people to leave. That's how good the wedding was. Mm-hmm. We had to keep extending everyone, and it's like no one would leave.
Yeah.
It was just, and how did we handle that? The hardest part was telling my grandfather, because my family's Jewish,
mm-hmm.
and I told him, look, we're going to get, and everyone loved my ex, well, once they got over the whole gay thing,
mm-hmm.
and then she was just part of the family, and everyone loved them, and the way I approached that is, this is me, accept it, or don't, but I'm not playing your game, kind of,
mm-hmm.
And it was hard. I'm simplifying it. It was really hard. And there were lots of fights and tears and with me and my family. And I stopped talking to people. And then it just all came together over time, you know. And I just told my grandparents, oh, we're getting married. And I just want you to know, and you're invited, but you don't have to come if you don't want to. I won't be hurt. I just want you to be comfortable, and I want you to be included if you want to. And my grandfather was like, okay, are you going to kiss a cross? I said, no, I'm not going to kiss a cross. He said, then we will be there. And he danced with every single girl there.
Yeah.
You
oh,
know?
My gosh,
so
that's
it was
so
amazing.
Funny. So it turned out, like, fine once they...
Perfect.
Is that... Did they become more comfortable with the idea of, like, gays and lesbians
mm-hmm.
as a community?
It was really a cute evolution. It really was.
So
I can't tell you some of the stories because
yeah.
it would embarrass some people because they didn't... No, they weren't acting right. They just
yeah.
thought they were being inclusive. And it was my mom. And I was like, Mom, you can't do that. You have to act like they're a guy. Because she'd come out with, like, nothing if we were
yeah.
somewhere. And my ex would be like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And cover, you know, her face. And so my mom got it. And my ex was like... When we split up, my mom was still inviting her to stuff, and I'm
mm-hmm.
like, stop it.
Yeah.
You must stop. I don't want them here, you know? And that ex is still a very active part of my life.
Oh, like today she is?
Even today.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So, tell me a way that, the hardest time you've experienced in your adult life.
My adult life were two things. Okay, so I was gay for quite a while, or actually bisexual is the proper term, but I was with women for a while, and a long while, and then I met a man, and I was like, oh, okay. And when I went back to men, it was so hard. It's like I had to come out all over again. And I was in supervision for my MSW hours. And my supervisor, who is a gay man, used to tease me all the time that I should write a book because it's like because I was going through a coming out process of being straight that was as bad as my coming out being gay,
mm-hmm.
that it was just really kind of weird.
Yeah.
So when I met this man, I fell deeply, deeply, deeply in love. We were going to get married. It was like something I've never felt with anyone. I don't think it's because he was a man. I think it's the energy and the connection we had. He turned out to be not so good a guy over the long run. And that was probably the hardest thing I've ever gone through in my life was my time with him and after, because it almost destroyed me.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything good within me was used against me. And I let it happen. I didn't know I was letting it happen at the time, but in retrospect.
Do you think that's, like, also part of your spirituality? It kind of made you who you are through that? Like, spirit brought
you
there?
I think spirit brings you everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think, my personal belief is that nothing happens without divine guidance, kind of. Whether we choose to listen or not is up to us. I certainly had signs with him that things weren't right,
mm-hmm.
But I didn't know. I was a little naive, and I couldn't have gotten through it without my spirituality. I seriously think I'm a very good healer, and I remember praying and saying, I know I heal, don't think I don't know that I can't make myself bleed out. And I said to God or whoever, you better do something about this. And things did start happening, clearly, but it was the most horrible thing I've ever been through. What happened with him.
Like at the end?
And through.
Oh.
Through some of it.
Okay.
And no, I won't go into detail.
Yeah, so.
I see it on your face, or no. that's just a little too personal. That sums it up, kind of. He almost destroyed me.
Yeah.
Because my heart was so pure.
How did you, like, move on from it?
Well, I went into therapy, and I used healers, and my friends, and my family, and then I met someone who eventually became my ex-husband, because we probably shouldn't have gotten married, because I was too raw from him, from everything, but I wasn't thinking straight, but it was a good marriage, just had some insurmountable issues.
Did you meet him shortly after the last one? Or the one before him?
Yes.
Okay. Really?
Yes.
Oh.
Nothing I recommend, but, you know, I'm not one to walk away if something feels right. And he was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
My ex-husband was wonderful. We just had really different ideas of how life should be.
Yeah. So, being that you're a spiritual person and a healer, so did any of those personal experiences lead you into the line of work that you're doing with spirituality?
I think everything's led me into that, but I'm also a clinical social worker, and I think it all led me into that too. I do both things actively. I didn't know what a social worker was growing up, and when I went to college, someone told me I was a social worker, and I was like, what? Because I had thought social work was party planning.
Yeah.
And I found out then what it really was, and when I went to the orientation, I was in a room full of people that I realized were just like me, and it was like the heavens opened up. So I can't really separate my spiritual and my social work, because they're both such a huge part of me, and I think everything in my life has led me to this point. I have a successful healing business, and I have a successful private clinical practice.
So what does like me mean? Like when you went in the room and you saw all the people are like you for social work.
Well, how do I explain this? I always believed, as I described earlier, that we were very lucky, and that's how we were born into, just by the luck of the draw, we were born into the lives we were.
Mm-hmm.
I became friends when we moved to a certain area with people that my family did not approve of because they were, quote, below me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I liked them because they were real. They were just real people. And so my parents always gave me a really hard time that I was always for the underdog, what's the matter for me, that kind of stuff. And so I always felt like I didn't change because I believed in what I believed in, but I always felt like something maybe was a little wrong with me. And also, there was also that piece because I had moved from where I had moved from to that area where I met all these new friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just different. It was a different place. And so my parents always said that, you know, why are you always for the underdog? What's the matter with you? Blah, blah, blah. And when I sat in that auditorium, tons of people cared about other people and saw them for who they were and not what they did and all that stuff. And they were kindred spirits. So mm-hmm. there wasn't actually something wrong with me.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
It's just who you are.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned that being that you guys grew up a certain way and you saw things, how they were in your lifestyle, that it was kind of like a niche for, like, feminism or for activism because you would, like, be grown up this way and, like, see.
Well, and injustices. I always get upset at any injustice.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw how men treated me because I was really pretty,
mm-hmm.
and I had a cute little body,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was a little height, and I really noticed a difference as time went on, and I giggle a lot, I always have, mm-hmm. and I like, you know, I'm a girl, I've always been girly and whatever, but I've always been super smart, and I don't play by the rules because I don't know what they are for girls,
mm-hmm.
and, I mean, I do, but yeah, I kind of don't care. And to me, for as long as I can remember, seriously, for as long as I can remember, I see no reason why I should do something because I'm a girl or not do something because I'm a girl.
Mm-hmm.
How that got instilled in me, I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I was born that way. Then I started seeing how men treated me because I looked that way or I giggled or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd see that they thought I was stupid.
Yeah.
And I'd laugh. I didn't necessarily get offended at it.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be like, you're so stupid that you think I'm stupid. Go ahead, honey. Think I'm stupid.
Yeah.
And I get what I need.
Yeah.
You know, not by working my female anything. Just by letting them. My theory was always, think whatever you want. I don't really care. I know the truth.
Yeah.
You know, so if I wanted to wear stuff up to my chin, great. If I wanted to wear something cut down to my navel, great. You know, and if someone wants to pretend it's about something other than it is, that's their problem, not mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always felt that way. And then when I went into business and stuff, not my own business, when I worked in offices and stuff, I really saw a difference. This was actually really interesting. When I was straight, I was treated one way.
Mm-hmm.
When I was gay, I didn't get some of the BS that I got as a female.
Yeah.
You know,
that's so interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it's about.
Yeah.
You know, it's just whatever.
That's so weird.
It's totally weird. But as I saw women doing that and women being treated differently and not getting the same amount of money, and because I work hard for my money, so don't mess with my money. You know what I mean? I just became more and more interested in women's rights.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and reproductive rights, don't even get me started on.
Yeah.
What's
that?
Like birth control, rights, birth control,
yeah.
and all that stuff. The only class I've ever walked out of in college was when, and again, this is my beliefs, but we're pro-life people because I think they're lunatics.
Yeah.
And I'm being nice.
Yeah.
So I think as time went on, I just became more and more and more involved in feminism, but not male-hating feminism, because I love men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's they're fine. It's just
society.
Well, I mean, there's some men out there, morons, yeah. But, you know, I'm not one of those people that hate men. I just think there's a lot of misunderstanding between men and women, and I think we're molded that way from society. I don't think it has to be that way. Not all cultures are like that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot are. But, yeah. And I've just never, ever, ever done what I'm supposed to do because I'm a female.
Mm-hmm.
I see no reason for it.
Yeah.
And I live my life that way. I teach women that. I have a lot of young women that I work with, and I'm really good at empowering them and helping them find that center. Because no one's more important than another person. I think that's my bottom line thing, as opposed to feminism. I still like men to open doors for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm old-fashioned that way. In the gay community, I was hassled for that,
yeah.
You know, because I like makeup and I have long hair and I dress how I dress, and some of the gay women, they hated me,
yeah.
You know, because they felt I was catering to men.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never, ever, ever catered to men in my looks or perfumes I wear or anything.
Yeah.
It's all about me.
For you.
All I care about is me,
yeah.
With that. I want to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether it's in overalls, and that's the day I'm doing that, or something different.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the power in feminism, for me, is to be able to be whoever you are and just equal rights and equal everything,
mm-hmm.
You know?
So you have a pretty strong personality.
Mm-hmm.
That's obvious. So mm-hmm. How did you manage to keep your morals and your ethics strong when you were fighting for, like, whichever, like, cause, for whether it's women's activism or gay rights, when you were, like, knocked down from people?
Well, I have a good temper. Not as an even tempered, but I have a pretty feisty temper, which I've learned to control over the years. But what I do know is totally losing my temper isn't going to do anything for me. And so I try to stay calm and logical and find my way around, because the end result is, if I'm fighting for something, I want what I want,
mm-hmm.
And I'm going to find a way to do it. And will I plow over you legally and ethically if I have to, or to do it? Absolutely. But I'm not going to step on someone else to make something happen. And to me, the most important things in my life, I mean, the most important thing, the things I live my life by, is trying to be as honest as possible. Trying to have as much integrity as possible all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I try really hard to walk my talk. I'm not perfect. I don't all the time, but I try.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to be fair, you know? And so those are kind of the things that I use to fight anything,
okay.
You know? And to always be able to look at I have a big thing about being able to look in the mirror and look in my own eyes deeply and not feel icky.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's really important. I feel like everyone should know how to do that.
You just do it?
Definitely.
And then you go,
yeah.
Stacy, are you okay with this? And if I have to look away, I'm not.
Oh my gosh, I've never tried that. I should do that.
You should.
I really should. So what made you want to begin your line of work?
I don't think I had a choice in either.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is, I don't think anyone in their right mind goes into social work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I really don't. And as I said, I thought it was party planning.
Yeah.
And when I was taking some psych class at CSUN way back when, there was a professor explaining the different things you could do with a BA in psych. And the only reason I was taking psych is I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And she described something. And I'm like, there's that social work word again. So I met with her afterwards and I said, what is social work? I don't understand.
Yeah.
And she said, what are your interests? And so I was explaining to her some of my interests, and it was, you know, it was like battered women. It was just, I don't even remember, to be honest. And she went, oh, you're a social worker. I said, I am. And I said, well, what do I do now? And she said, and she gave me a little bit of guidance, and I researched it, and I took a few sociology classes. Unfortunately, this was, like, further on, so I couldn't take more. And I took sociology. I was like, oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, and I just related to everything. Mm-hmm. And so when I graduated from CSUN, I thought, all right, I'll go to the work school to be a social worker. Mm-hmm. So I researched, and I decided which schools I would apply to, and I applied, and I got in. And did my program, got out, and started working, and just landed on one good job after another, and just it just evolved, you know. I'm an achiever. Mm-hmm. I try to be. Well, sometimes, not always.
Yeah.
And I just kept going forward until I got my LCSW. Part of it was the money, because I knew I could make more and more money, and I really like the ability to be flexible. I don't really like being told what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to be sometimes, but yeah. It's not one of my strong suits. And then with the healing, as I said, I just had people coming to me all the time. And then I had a teacher, who I finally accepted someone as a teacher, and she taught me all kinds of stuff and how my gifts worked. And it evolved from there, and I was working at this place, and I finally made business cards, and I showed them to someone, and I said, what do you think? I made business cards for my healings, and they said, oh, they're cute. They're nice. I said, oh, thank you, and I took it back, and the guy said, Stacy, you have to let people keep your cards.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, you're right, and it just evolved, and I have my biological dad and an Indian dad, and my American Indian dad, I was scared to tell him that I was charging for healings because it's kind of not good, and I told him, and he supported that very much so, and I told another elder about it. I was a little nervous, and she was upset that I wasn't charging enough, so it just evolved and evolved and evolved.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then I have clients. I've had clients that call from Canada, India, you know, and because you don't have to be present. So
yeah.
It's just evolved, you know.
So do you like the healing line of work better or social work? Or do you tie them together?
I like them both because they're such different pieces of me. I miss running in the streets and finding my clients and working in the streets.
Yeah.
Because it's such a different piece. And it's so fulfilling to help someone like that, and so many people are scared of doing that kind of stuff with whichever population you're working with. I work with domestic violence now, and you know, there's so many therapists that won't do that. They just won't touch it
because they don't feel comfortable, or
they're scared, or they don't understand, or whatever. And you know, it's not that I don't get scared. Sometimes someone gets out of jail, and I'm really scared. I'm like, yeah, I need a picture of them now. You know, but. I just like social work, you know, and the things I'm always interested in they're always the dangerous things, you know, not always, but, you know, and I just have a really humanitarian heart, and then the healing is just a whole different energy. It's a whole different thing. I'm connected at that. When I'm doing a healing, I connect to energy, and it's like wonderful, you know, it's a different wonderful.
Can you like bring them both together, like social work and healing, and...
Not at this point. Not that I know how. I'm too protective of my license and stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, I do spiritual account. You know, it's the world of Google.
Yeah.
And so when someone knows about both businesses and come to me for the first time, I make them choose which business they want, and they have to stick to it.
Okay.
Because I can't cross back and forth. I wish they could come together. That would be incredible.
But you just have... I just like limits with both.
I do. Yeah. I do. And I have pretty strong boundaries.
Mm-hmm. So what is the most rewarding moment that you have felt in social work?
Oh my God, there's so many.
Like first one on the top of your head.
I honestly can't answer that. I've worked in so many different populations.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked with moms and their kids. I've worked in hospice. I've worked in AIDS. I've worked... with families, I've worked I didn't know what I've done. And then my private practice. They're all so different. I mean, in AIDS, helping someone realize they don't have an A sticking on their forehead and they can go on with life. Yeah. That was a big one.
Okay.
You know, for this person. Or that you can have a life, or no, you don't have to feel guilty that you're still alive.
Yeah.
You know, that was one. In hospice, wow. Helping people die and helping their families cope. That's a big one. With families and kids, I had a little girl that was horribly molested by someone. And very young, she was only 8.
Oh my God.
I loved this kid. Any therapist that tells you that they don't have favorites, they're lying, okay? And in this little girl just was in my heart. Somehow she got in there because I'm pretty good at detaching.
Mm-hmm.
And because her mom was so good and so hands-on, the progress that little girl made was amazing.
Wow.
And so that's a moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's so many, or in my private practice, I had a young woman who was in a very abusive relationship and a lot of stuff went down.
Uh-huh.
And she got away. And she got away because of her work with me. Now, I'm not taking credit for it because it wouldn't happen if she didn't do the work. But I know I was helpful.
You helped her, yeah.
And I've helped, you know, or someone who is being stalked by this crazy person, like really scary.
Yeah.
There was no way to make her feel better, so it's like, okay, how do we get you through this and cope? So that was good. You know, I mean, there's just too many, and they're just really different.
So do these, like, situations affect you emotionally? Like, when you see, when you're helping a little girl who got raped at the age of 8 or someone who's being stalked, or all the,
sometimes
like, the
sometimes they scare me really bad and they mess me up, you know, because sometimes I can get scared by stuff going on in other people's lives.
And you, like, feel it.
Well, I can feel it. I'm really good at detaching, but when you see how crazy people can be firsthand, it kind of does something to you a little bit. You'd be, how could it not, you know? So when I worked with this particular woman with a stalker, it certainly made me aware of some things.
Was she, like, young, or?
I can't answer anything.
Okay. Oh, yeah, obviously. So, same question, but for healing.
Okay, like, so with my healings, I don't remember stuff a lot afterwards. Okay. But one, they're all rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's because it's helping people clear out their stuff and grab their lives, kind of. So depending what they come to me for. You know?
So if they're, like, emotional during it, if they're emotional before it and then a completely different person after it, can you see that? Like, can you?
Well, sometimes, but, I mean, in both fields, really, once someone's better and okay, you often don't hear from them again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to just wing it, you know? When people let me know how they're doing, of course it's wonderful and I hear stuff, you know, and that does happen. Mm-hmm. And my testimonials are really good. You know, if you go to my website, they're all true.
Or, yeah.
You know? My website for healing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have a single thing on that. I don't even remember most of them.
Yeah. You don't remember it because of, like, the energy it takes for you to do that, right?
I think so, yeah.
So are you, like, connected to their, like, energy?
I open myself up to their energy, yes. I set...
Oh, my God. That is so much.
I set what's called a circle, kind of, I guess is the best way to explain it. At the beginning of a healing, and I open energy, and at the end of it, it's closed.
So you're closing yours and theirs, and it's not...
Well, the connection is
closed
at that point.
Like, you
detach?
The healings
usually go on for a few days, from what I understand.
Oh, okay.
But, you
know. Okay. So, do you have any personal experiences of your own that led you into, like, your line of work? Like, did you...
My whole life? yeah, sure. You know, all the stuff it's all been an evolution, you know? It's not like one thing happened and I thought, I'm going to go fight for women and fight for justice and do healings I never even meant to be in private practice. It just happened.
Mm-hmm.
I never wanted to be.
Yeah.
Now I'm glad I am, but it's, you know, because even though I miss running in the streets for social work, I'm tired. I don't want to keep running in the streets.
So were you, like, actually, like...
I looked for my clients at one job under the freeways.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I was in many a dangerous situation. I was a real social worker.
Yeah.
You know, and I loved it.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess I like the adrenaline.
Did that teach you about, like, so many different people and, like, their experiences, like, as opposed to yours and how to respect, like, other people?
Sure, but I already had a good handle on that for some reason, mm-hmm. which I've never understood. I really don't get it.
Did you see anything that you thought you didn't even, like, existed or anyone could ever experience?
The thing that I've seen that I didn't know existed is the cruelty that people have towards other people.
Really?
Yeah. I did have one client that ate dirt for nutrients because she was from another country, and that's what they did in
yeah.
that place. So it was normal there, but not normal here.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was very touched when she showed that to me and appalled
yeah.
and educated her on where she was living and the kind of dirt she was eating.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't good.
Yeah.
And I've always had lots of different kinds of people around me. So uh-huh. I think that's a lot of what broadened it. And I've always had some weird innate understanding about other things, other people, other cultures, and a sense of justice, you
mm-hmm.
know. I don't want to help everyone. Some things aren't for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that, as long as they're being treated fairly, you know. Women are one of my things. Water is one of my things. AIDS is one of my things. American Indians is one of my things. Domestic violence. I mean, the list goes on.
Yeah.
You know?
And all these happen just, like, naturally to you.
They just happen. Something
oh my
catches
gosh.
My attention. And
yeah.
Like, really? And then I go after it, you know. Right now, I'm pretty mad about some of the women's rights stuff that's
mm-hmm.
going on in politics, the threat to it, rather.
Mm-hmm.
So will I get politically involved in that way? Probably not. I don't do politics. But what I do is fight for things.
Mm-hmm.
And I do them in other ways. I'm into human trafficking, too. That's my new big thing, which, you know, I'm saying I don't want to do dangerous stuff anymore. But, we'll see if I end up with anything.
You look
like
for
that.
The thrill.
I do. That's something I've realized.
So know? Would you want to do that in, like, other countries?
I don't know. It would depend on what it was.
Yeah.
I don't do blanket statements because I need details.
Yeah.
You know, I've lived enough to know I need details and I'm not going to just jump in.
Yeah.
I think women can do anything and should do anything. And I think men should do anything too. You know, there shouldn't be these outdated ideas.
Yeah.
And it's sad that it still exists
mm-hmm.
to me. And it
yeah,
pisses me
sad.
Off. It really pisses me off.
Yeah.
But I'll never live my life according to how I'm supposed to be as a female.
Yeah. Do you think, like, society has things to do with that? Like, we're
oh,
supposed
sure.
to just because I'm a female?
Mm-hmm. I do think there's some natural tendency that perhaps a lot of females might be a little more nurturing.
Yeah.
But maybe not.
Yeah.
You know, my ex-husband's more nurturing than I am.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty nurturing, but he was just like, oh my God, he was the best.
Yeah.
You know, so I think each couple has to find what their dynamic is,
mm-hmm.
or if you're in a workplace, what works. But
mm-hmm.
I don't think just women should do this or not this, you know.
Yeah. Do you remember probably, like, the best day of your life and why it was the best day and how it made you feel?
Well, there's been a few, but one of the best days in my life, it's so silly, both of them, but I've had a lot of best days,
mm-hmm.
but they're not the kind of best days you'd expect.
Yeah.
My favorite kind of day is a spontaneous, wonderful, in nature type days. I love nature,
mm-hmm.
or at, you know, a museum or whatever. But my first favorite day that stands all the way out is the first time I went to Albuquerque for the gathering, which is a humongous powwow.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember getting off the plane and just standing in the airport while my sister was doing all this stuff. And I just stood in the airport so happy and feeling the energy of New Mexico. And I thought I'd died and gone to home and to heaven. And then when I was at the powwow and in the hotel, and it was all Native people, it was just like home.
Yeah.
And I was so happy. And that was one of the best 3 days of my life,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it was just, everything was just magical. And even though we were all sick, my sister was sick, I was sick.
Yeah.
And we were rooming was sick. Didn't stop us for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
You, well, it slowed us down.
But, yeah, it didn't stop you.
But that was one of those times why, I can't answer that. I don't know.
Yeah, it just felt.
And then recently, I love giraffes, and my friend works somewhere, and I was able to go have, like, a one-on-one with this giraffe. I love animals.
Okay.
And, I mean, I really love animals.
Yeah.
And the giraffe kissed me.
Oh, my God.
And I thought I had died and gone to heaven. And
oh,
so those
gosh.
Two times stand out the most, just particular events. I know it's probably shocking because it should be, like, life events or
yeah,
something
yeah.
like that. But it's not for me.
Yeah.
It was the energy of the moments, I guess. But, I mean, the thing
I
that makes me the happiest or the best things for me is when the moon's really full and I can be out in it.
Uh-huh.
Or the sun is on my face and it's not burning sun like we've had. But
yeah.
Those kind of natural moments to me, especially if you have people around you that, you know, you're in sync with or that you love
mm-hmm.
or whatever, it's just the best
yeah.
to me.
So you're more, like, into, like, the moments of your life rather than, like,
event.
The best time, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say, because I think it's moments that string together that create the happiness that forms
yeah.
life.
Yeah, oh my gosh. That's, I've never thought of it that way. That's really amazing. So, is there a time that you ever felt like you wanted to give up on any of your lines of work, or if you felt like you were being, like, dragged down or something wasn't right, and you just didn't know how to handle it, so you wanted to give up?
Well, I've certainly had my down times with business, you know. I get tired of stuff sometimes, but, like, with my private practice, when it was first opening, you know, I was always worried about the money and all
mm-hmm.
that stuff. And even now, I get, and it's my fault, because I book myself like an insane person.
Yeah.
And I just get tired. I'm very picky who I pick as a client. Or who I allow to come to me as a client.
Yeah.
And so I'm very fortunate. My clients are wonderful.
Yeah.
But if insurance companies are just, like, giving me a hard time about paying me, which they always do,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that, I get very frustrated and sometimes think, I just can't do this anymore. You know?
Yeah.
So, sure, I want to throw in the towel with that. My healing is never.
Yeah.
Giving up on life, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, okay, I'm really tired.
God, yeah.
I do something. I need my life to be different. And then I'll look within.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of prayer.
Yeah.
And then I look within and think, okay, what can I make different?
Mm-hmm.
If you're not happy, what can I make different? And then I try to do it, sometimes successfully, sometimes not.
Yeah.
You know? Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it did. So, I was going to ask another one. I totally forgot. It was regarding that, and I totally forgot what it was.
I think things change,
mm-hmm.
and I think life evolves, and what we know for sure at one moment, we don't know for sure down the road. You
yeah.
know? Like, whatever cause I'm fighting for at any given time, it's not like I switch up all the time. I'm actually
yeah.
pretty consistent. But you can just shift, and you have to be willing to shift and maybe adapt to new ideas, new dreams. Maybe a dream got broken
mm-hmm.
for some reason. And you can either let that crush you, or you can go, okay, do I still want to do it? Do I want to do it differently? Is it something else? All right, I grieve that. You have to grieve.
Yeah.
And move forward,
mm-hmm.
you know? But the underlying thing that runs across everything for me is fairness.
Okay.
And justice and equality and, like, this whole religious fighting.
Yeah.
I can't even stand.
Oh, like Syria?
Anywhere.
Yeah.
Pick any two religions.
Yeah.
I don't even care what they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's if people just had compassion and respect and kindness in their views and treatment of each other, it would be a different world. And so, clearly that would go over into feminism.
Yeah.
You know? Clearly, I'm female,
mm-hmm.
so is it close to my heart? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and do I get super outraged at some of the injustices to women?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I do. And I can't let myself think about it too much because it'll really upset me.
Yeah.
So then I just try to do stuff about it or empower people one-on-one
mm-hmm.
and do my piece of what I can in the world.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a good cause or a good organization, I'm there.
Okay. Yeah, that's really cool. So what advice would you have for somebody who can't find that, like, spiritual self in them to talk them out of, like, giving up on something or life in general, who, like, doesn't have the ability to see things as an outside person?
Well, I mean, the one thing that's true in life, there's not a whole thing that are absolutely 100% for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, in my opinion, there's only three. You're born, things will change, and you die.
Yeah.
And when people can realize that, that whatever you're in, good or bad, is going to change.
Yeah.
They can hold on till there's a glimmer, you know. And at those points, if you're just feeling that down and that hopeless, I encourage people to go out with friends, do things that make, even if you're only happy for half a second.
Yeah.
Pull that in, you know. Go, if you're spiritual or religious, go to those things. If mm-hmm. you like sound baths, which are different instruments that are played, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Go to one. If you like flying kites, go fly a kite. If you like volunteering, go volunteer. You know, anything. Anything to get yourself out. Go watch something happy. Cry your eyes out. Do what you need to do.
Yeah.
Just know what's going to change. And just look for the ittiest, bittiest glimmer.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Spiritually, what to find? I don't know. It depends on the person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, books are your friend.
Yeah.
Old school books.
Yeah.
You know, I often encourage people to go to whatever existing bookstore is near them and
mm-hmm.
go to the spiritual section, you know, and just see what interests you.
Yeah.
You know.
So kind of just, like, look for something, like you said.
See what speaks to you. Yeah. Just see what speaks to you. And see, then open it up and see if it's that, you know, if it makes sense to you.
Something, yeah.
You know, do meditation. There's mm-hmm. a million ways to meditate, and God knows YouTube will show you them.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
So meditate or do yoga or work out. You know, I hate working out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still trying to learn how to do that.
Yeah.
you know, but it's kind of just like being kind to yourself the way you would a best friend or mm-hmm. a child or your sister or a parent.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And last question, now that I know a lot more about your personality and how you go about things, tell me about one personality trait that made you who you are today that you refuse to change about yourself regardless what the circumstance is.
Well, I have two. I'm completely idealistic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm completely stubborn.
Okay.
And then I'm a little bit jaded. So that helps me.
Okay.
And I'm honest.
Yeah.
I'm super honest.
So
and
you
I have
feel
a wicked sense of humor, which I think is really good,
you
but
do.
Other people don't necessarily.
Yeah. So you would say all of those traits are something that you would never give up about yourself,
because mm-hmm.
you would probably lose yourself a little.
They are who I am.
Yeah.
Well, my spirituality and all that stuff, too. I mean, that's just a piece of me.
Yeah. So do you have anything else that you want to touch up on?
No, just that I think women should go after everything they want to go after and not let anyone ever tell you you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if they say that, you can't see what they're saying. Is there a constructive criticism in there somewhere? Find it. Use it.
Yeah.
Use it to your ability. And don't get so caught up in what people think about you. Who cares?
Yeah. Have you ever had a situation where someone thought something, like, so terrible about you when it was someone close and you got out of it and didn't care?
Well, it still hurt my feelings, and I don't like having people think incorrect things. Yes, that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly happened. And then I'll be in angst over it for a while, and then it's like, in all honesty, I go to, oh, who cares? Screw them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because you can't make someone see the truth.
Yeah. I do that sometimes, too, but then I feel like sometimes saying screw them is, like, so much easier than to, like, work through it.
Right, but sometimes I can't work through something if it involves trying to educate someone
yeah.
About truth, mm-hmm. and they don't want to hear it or they can't hear it, there reaches a point where I have to say, screw it.
Yeah.
You know, and walk away.
Except that.
At that point, it's their problem, not mine.
Yeah.
If you have a misperception about me,
mm-hmm.
and I'm willing to try to correct that for you, or talk to you about it to see why you're feeling that way, and you basically have your hands in your ears and you're going, la, 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 la,
mm-hmm.
why am I going to waste my time?
Yeah.
There's too many people I can help and too many things in the world that matter.
Yeah.
When that happens. Right, because I know the truth. God knows the truth. The people yeah. close to me know the truth, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
But I know the truth.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that concludes the interview, and thank you for sharing all that information.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I feel like I learned so much more about you and have a new...